Okay, I'm going to try something different. I don't know if this will work. I'm looking at an essay by Don Thiel from April 1954 in McLuhan's Explorations, and it's about Finnegan's Wake, and he sums up Finnegan's Wake. And I was reading it, and I think you can put ionic aspects in here. And some of the points that Roxy's making about the archetypal imagery that keeps coming back. But it's not simple talk, not complex, but could be difficult. If it's too much, we won't do it. But let's see how it goes. So this is his explanation of Finnegan's Wake, and the woman who buried James Joyce in Switzerland, close friend, Maria Gideon Welker, something like that, she wrote to McLuhan and said, hey, this essay gets Finnegan's Wake really well. Okay, so someone's typing. How can I... is that you, Gene? Who's typing?
No, it's not me. And
yeah, so I don't want too many
sounds. Can you check it on Turbo Bridge to see who's making the noise?
Yeah, well, they're not typing right now. So I hope they mute, so we don't want too many noises. Okay,
I just heard it again.
So
there it is.
This is, yeah, what's that?
That's me, Bob.
Me either.
Yeah, it's coming out of Gene's. I think it's Gene. Gene's distracting us by claiming someone
I'm
else.
Not typing.
It's typing. Coming out of your thing.
Gene, stop typing, man, for goodness sake.
Okay, well, we'll see if they surface again. All right, so we have the dual, or the two factors, the blood and the brain, say. And the blood is symbolized by the mother, ALP, and Olivia Plurabelle in Finnegan's Wake. And the brain is symbolized by Humphrey Chipton Earwicker, HCE. So if we look at Ian saying the altering of the autonomic nervous system, the blood, stuff in the gut, that's more important than the brain. So this interplay of the bloodstream and the brain and other parallel dialectics is what Don is emphasizing. And he pretty well lays out every theme that McLuhan talks about in his literary criticism, his art structure, his art theory, Don touches on. So it's actually, this essay is a key to McLuhan, because McLuhan is translating Finney's Wake. And so Don takes all the themes that McLuhan develops and shows how they're in Finnegan's Wake. So then we're going to show how... Yes?
I hate to interrupt you, but Akito is trying to contact you on Google Snatch. He's been waiting 6 hours and is wondering.
Well, I'm sure he's learned a lot. What's Google Snatch? I don't know how
the
to
chat.
Do that.
The chat on... In studio.
Oh, Google Snatch. That's right. So what's he saying?
Goober Snatch.
Okay, that's all right. So we got to do the cash flow. That's right. We got to do the cash flow notes. Akito is emphasizing that. Okay, so I'll go over and get those, Akito. Why do you say never mind, Akito? Hey, why don't you phone in?
No. He just give him another 30 seconds to hear. We just talked about him. He might not have heard it yet.
Yeah, he might be on delay. I'm wondering if Brian is on delay. Sometimes he starts talking and he doesn't know other people are talking. Are you listening to us by Skype, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you're not having delay. Okay, now, Keto, I don't see him. Yeah. Akito, I don't see you in here. Bill, could you unmute Akito?
He says he's on Achieve 2.
What's that? I don't know what Achieve 2 is. He hasn't. He's not on
Skype line.
You know.
Skype line. Achieve 2 is a Skype
right,
line.
Well,
it's built.
Well, what is that? I'll try this. It says host. Well, it doesn't flip off.
Do you have a Skype page? Can you go to Skype and see if you can unmute him on Skype or open
well,
him
Bill,
up?
Well, Bill should be doing this. Where are you, Bill? I don't know what you're supposed to do. It's always you who get Akito in. There's nothing on my Skype. I'll do Bill's panic button. Who's typing? Can't say? You don't want to say who's typing? Hey, Bill. Are you bringing Akito in?
He's on, Bob,
okay,
if he'll just talk.
Email is a keto topic.
What?
Akito's on. He's been on for hours.
Yeah, but where is he?
He says he's muted.
Yeah, he's not muted.
No, he's not muted.
I've got two
muted. He won't be on your board, Bob. He's coming directly to the studio.
Right, so how do I unmute him?
He's not muted.
He can
Hello?
Speak. Yeah, we can hear you, Akito.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yay!
I was screaming many times.
Have you been typing?
We didn't hear those. We didn't
hear
those. Yeah, I
think the typing sound was me, typing on the chat line.
Oh, okay. The funny thing is we got your mail through the post office. But remember, Ian said that you were in another world. That mailing may have proved that.
No, that's not true.
What?
Am I still in the other world?
I think so. Well, why did we get the mail so late? Did you tell them? Did you get them to find it?
Yeah, well, what happened was the tracking system says that the package was in your P.O. box almost a week ago, maybe 10 days ago. But remember, you were too busy and never got to the post office?
No, we did. We got to the post office a week ago.
Yeah, but when you went there, you said the package wasn't there.
Yes. The person who did it for us watched the guy. He searched around in the back, and she was watching him, and he never found it.
That's weird.
Yeah. And then
that's real weird.
A few days later, we got it.
So you personally
went to
the post
office?
So
maybe they found it eventually.
Oh, so
but
they,
I was thinking that if we never got it, that would be proof that you're in another world, and you just can't connect with our world through the mails. But we got it, so if you don't want to think you're in another world, that's okay. But I don't know if Ian ever said, I thought Ian said years ago that you were still in the other world.
That was
Did he ever tell you that you were not in there?
I don't know.
You don't remember Ian telling you that you had been liberated?
No.
Okay, so I don't know if you were. So there might be that kind of anomalies in getting your package. It took a while for it to be transported here because...
But was the package intact?
Yep.
Were there letters inside?
I didn't see letters, no.
Did you... There was no letter in the envelope.
All right, Carolyn. If Carolyn's still up, she may not be. She did not find any letters.
Oh, shit. So you didn't find a thank you card, too, either?
I don't think... I didn't see one.
Oh, shit. customs always take things away. Yeah, this is the second time. Remember, I sent a CD to Carolyn when you guys were down in Cambridge.
Right.
Yeah, through Sue Bone, and I sent it to Sue to Canada so that she could bring it down, but Sue's apparently the Canadian customs took the CD away. It was just a case.
I tell you, man,
which is pretty stupid.
You're not connected to us or something in some way, or they steal any communications that come to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we shipped a computer somewhere, and that got stolen.
Well, maybe the pinks are on the full attack before they disappear.
Yeah, full alert.
Yeah.
They're trying to find out whatever information they could get off Carolyn's computer.
Yeah, but I do have a copy of the letter. Would you like to read it?
Would you like me to read it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. 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 First of all, what did I send you?
You want me to say?
Yeah, sure.
A disgusting rubber pizza.
In a what kind of box?
I didn't notice the box. Was there something unique about the box?
Yeah, it's Domino's.
Ah, I didn't notice that.
Oh, so they took the box too. But I posted the photo on Facebook. If you go to the Students of Bob, it's there. So you haven't seen it.
Okay. All right.
Okay, the whole joke was that I'm going to deliver a pizza to Maui from here. That was a joke.
Yes.
That was a punchline. So I figured you got it, but since the Domino's box isn't there, oh, gosh, that sucks. You know, I actually went to the Domino's to buy the box.
I'm sorry to hear that. Very sorry. Extremely sorry.
To make it real.
That didn't work out.
Anyway, I enclosed the letter from the general manager of this particular Domino's in Japan to you. And he goes, dear new customer, thank you for ordering from Domino's Pizza, Hiratsuka Oiwake. That was a particular shop that was closest to my home.
Yeah.
And he goes, you are our very first customer from Hawaii, and we are extremely excited to deliver you our fresh L-size margarita pizza. And as we all say at Domino's Pizza, Hiratsuka Oiwake, we love you long time. And he goes, regards, Satoshi Nakamoto, assistant manager, Domino's Pizza, Hiratsuka Oiwake. And there's the address of his shop, and there's notice, goes, note, by the way, you can also order your next Domino's Pizza from Domino's Pizza Wailuku if you prefer their tachyonic Kamehameha delivery service. It only takes 2 hours. And there's the address of that, you know, Wailuku or Wailuku shop. So that was the whole thing.
Now, did you got the manager to sign that?
No, I made it up. And do you know who
Satoshi
Nakamoto is?
No.
He's the man who created cryptocurrency, like Bitcoin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All
right. It's not so you knew, so it's okay.
Okay, so when I got the pizza, I wrote back to Akito the following when I find it. So this is what I wrote back to Akito. Got your package today, in brackets, Monday, October 2nd, !! Alas, the pizza was ruined. It was almost like plastic. I tried to take a bite, but my teeth kind of stuck to it. Oh, well, the thought is what counts. Thanks. Now, when you read that, did you laugh?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I wrote you back.
Good. Right. What did you say? Oh, yeah, that tirade, that was real? That was based on your actual complaint?
Hmm? What tirade?
Well, when you get your email, let me just... Okay, just a second. Okay. Still looking for it. I see Roxy dropped out. I might have to call her. Maybe her phone.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, you dropped out 2 hours ago. Okay, so that's... I'm just seeing that, just looking at my email. Okay, from Akito. Still looking at Keto. Okay, that should be it. So Keto's answer was? Please read the warning note attached. Gaze at it while you and Carolyn drink restructure. Ha, ha, ha. Enough joking. I tried shipping the real baked fresh pizza, but the fascist pinks at the post office stopped me and made fun of me. So I had to settle with that stupid plastic replica. Sorry. So you actually tried to send a real pizza, and they wouldn't let you?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh. Okay, so that's the joke part. You're responding to my what you perceive as lie with your own lie.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't believe I took a bite out of it and got my teeth stuck in it.
No, I have a feeling you did.
Okay, so it's not true that you tried to send a reel in the fascist pinks. Okay.
Yeah. I was spending like 2 weeks trying to figure out what to send, and I wasn't sure what you guys went into it. So I figured, okay, send something unique, something that's very unique in Japanese way. And the that pizza is called a plastic food sample, and
yeah.
It's almost like arts and craft kind of thing. It takes a high craftsmanship to make that pizza, because they actually use a real pizza and take a molding out of it, then make a replica out of plastic. But it's the finishing touch that takes a lot of craftsmanship. And I went to the best place in Tokyo to find it, look for it.
And you found it.
I found it, yeah. And the whole domino thing began. Because I was only going to send a pizza alone, along with a plate. And I figured that'd be enough, but no, that's not enough. Make it into this whole like delivery joke. So I actually went to Domino's and got the box, which you didn't get.
Or we did, and no one noticed it. That box, whatever it was, has been thrown out.
No.
What? It didn't work. Okay. What you have here, I'm going to lead into it. There's two schools of thought. in 19th century symbolism. There was the doctrine of correspondences that came from Swedenborg and William Blake. And that seems to be you noticing the repeating images that have mystical meanings, mystery landscape meanings. There's then the other school is the doctrine run by the symbolists. So the symbolists, that would be Mallarmé, Baudelaire, maybe Rambo. They had the doctrine of synesthesia. Now, synesthesia would be the mixing of the senses. That might be the part of the alchemist world where they pun a lot and play with words. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I found this pretty interesting. You got the doctrine of correspondences, which is more matching and looking at the repeating images that are symbolizing, like the mirror, symbolizing other worlds. But then the playing with language was the other school, the symbolists. And they did the doctrine of synesthesia. So you were noticing the matching or the repeating cliches, the same message, plus them playing with language. That may be a mixture of the two schools. At least in poetry, they seem to be.
Yes. Going back to the Orphée of Jean Cocteau, he has there is a princess that is surrounded by some dead servants, and mm-hmm. they die, but they are like they come back to life mm-hmm. to serve her, and Orphée is, she says, you are sleeping. You're trying to understand the world, but you cannot understand the world. So why are you trying to understand the meaning? And Orphée becomes obsessed with the radio, and that is the princess has a radio that says a message three times every time, like yeah. weird things like a glass of water will save the world. A glass of water will save the world. And it repeats three times. Or yeah. numbers. And he thinks these weird phrases are the most amazing poetry. So he's like hypnotized by media, by the radio.
Right, right. Good point.
And the chauffeur of the princess is dead. That's why I say David Lynch is very influenced by him, because we don't know that these characters are dead until we see the picture.
Yeah.
And the wife of the poet is making some coffee for the chauffeur. And he says, please turn off the gas. And she says, why? He said, I can't stand that smell because that's how I died. I killed myself. And so he...
Is that Orpheus saying that, or is Orpheus the woman?
No, Orpheus is the poet. So okay. It's not the musician, but the poet. So the music yes. is the words.
Right,
and
right.
And the wife is Eurydice, and the other characters are the servants of the princess.
Right.
But it's like, that's why I say you only get Cocteau when you get Bob, because it's about how this poet is hypnotized by the radio, by the messages he hears that
yeah.
for the rest of the people, it makes no sense, these weird phrases or numbers that come out of the
right,
and this princess is interacting with the wolf through a mirror. She takes these dead people through the mirror. She has this radio and some globes to go through the mirror.
Yeah,
into that's other that's realms. So it's
really incredible.
Yes, it's really incredible, because
Cocteau uses a lot of the mirrors as a portal to go into different realms, and he's sort of reflecting of what is reality, and most of the time
he's mixing the private ascension process and its mirror images with media social mortar. He's putting both factors in the movie. No wonder it looked weird to people.
Yes, and he's saying to the people, you are all sleeping, and you cannot understand what's going on. The princess says to Orfe, what are you trying to understand? You're an idiot. You cannot understand anything. Like, because they're not aware of these other dimensions. Like,
and Orpheus is? And Orpheus is?
No. He's just, like, hypnotized by this radio that belongs to the princess. And he says, why these phrases don't come in other radios? He has to be in the car of the princess to listen to the voice that says the messages. So it's like all encoded that now I get it.
Yes. But had you ever seen it before?
If you see it before, it's just like surrealist, weird.
Yeah. Now you know the language. You know the code.
Yes, and I suppose David Lynch too, because he's really quoting a lot of Jean Cocteau. Yes. And also, like, images of the statues and the floor, the pattern on the floor.
Yeah.
And in one of the parts, the princess, the wife of the poet dies, and the princess say, stand up, and she's then real life. But then she becomes her servant, and when she's going to take her through the mirror, first she has a black dress, and before she crosses the mirror, all of a sudden she has a white dress.
Mm.
So these type of things are
okay.
Like,
did you
big influence in David Lynch?
Okay, did you look at articles on David Lynch? Oh, no, hold it. Did you look at any articles on David Lynch and Jean Cocteau?
No, but if you see the movie, you're
okay,
going to...
I did. Look at this. I just put that in. So listen to this. Somebody on Reddit, is that what it's called, Reddit? A guy commented, he says, I've recently been, and this was posted just 3 months ago, by a guy called Falcon Nazis.
Like Fulcanelli.
Yeah. I've recently been watching some films for the French director Jean Cocteau. He's considered a godfather of avant-garde cinema and had a very experimental, dreamlike way of storytelling and directing. Sound like anyone we know? Then he says, one movie in particular, Testament of Orpheus, his last film made in 1959. That's what you're talking about, right? Testament of Orpheus.
The other film, too.
Wait. Look, listen to what the guy says. He says he looked at what we're talking about, Testament of Orpheus is what he calls it, gave me serious Twin Peaks vibes, especially about the Black Lodge. The characters can speak and move backwards. The protagonist exists outside of time, and the scenes seem to be in a place both fantastic and frightening, as if you're stuck in a nightmare. There's a lot of stuff that appears to happen just behind what you're actually seeing, and it's very metaphysical and supernatural. Does anybody else want to talk about Cocteau and Lynch and the Black Lodge? I feel that Lynch was very influenced by him, even if only subconsciously. Cocteau is probably most famous for his 1946 adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, which I highly recommend. It has a lot of similar features to Orpheus, involves a very unexpected doppelganger plot. So everybody,
so when you see this, you see that David Lynch is not as original as you may had thought. He's actually quoting Jean Cocteau a lot.
Right.
And but the thing is, Jean Cocteau is doing both schools. Like, he has some type of more direct message and the symbolist. And he's trying to translate the different dimensions in which humans can interact and the different people like the princes, these type of ascended ones that
right.
interact with the Gulf or with parallel worlds. And
okay,
he's showing these things as fiction, but he's actually...
Right on.
Putting
he's a documentary.
What I am telling us.
Right. So then there's this article. Next one. Twin Peaks, 10 films that influenced David Lynch's unforgettable series. And they go through Meshes of the Afternoon, Out of the Past, Orphe, 1950.
Yes, and there is a phrase. I don't remember exactly how it goes, but it says something like the silence. The inverted silence is the only real message, something like that. I have
right.
to see the movie again.
Right.
But
which movie is that? The Orpheus? We're talking about Orpheus?
Yeah. Yes, it's the radio saying these phrases, these weird phrases.
Something
like
he's talking.
The inverted silence is the only real message. And
some of these
David
fans
uses
of Twin
Peaks. Language.
Yeah, some of these fans of Twin Peaks are pointing out the Orpheus connection. They see it's quite obvious. And then David Lynch, The Art of Life's Facebook. I guess it's his Facebook. And some book goes into Cocteau Cinema. So a lot of people in the Twin Peaks world have noticed what you're talking about. I just want to see if David Lynch ever says anything. In 1987, David Lynch presents the history of surrealist film. So he did that. So I think you're right that he knew all this stuff. He studied it. So if he's that literally doing Cocteau, then I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's trying to say something new about it. And he's not just doing that.
Yes, he's actually trying to talk about these dimensions, the kingdoms, the timings, the interaction with the Gulf and other things like... people disappearing in the woods and things that are woo-woo, but that actually happen.
All right. And so they seems to be known in the Lynch world about him influenced by Cocteau, but I don't see a statement by Lynch on it, other than he presented something on surrealist films. Okay. Now this is good preparation for what I'm going to read, because The Wake... Sidney's Wake may be something a little more comprehensive, the way Donald Thiel interprets it. So
yes,
here's
and
how
and Jean Cocteau is also telling you are all asleep. You're all in the cave, like Plato is trying to tell you.
Well, what's new? Okay, what's new about McLuhan is he's pointing out that we're awake. We're not fully aware of what woke us up. But he's saying by the mid-60s, humanity was being wakened by the different media mixes, because these different media cultures were not able to contain their users like 100 years
ago. Yes, and the poet, Orfeu, when he's listening to the radio, he's like, where does these messages come from? What is this voice? I have the impression... this voice is talking to me. That there is Bob.
Yeah, there. So it's literally the dilemma of being me. It is Xenocrony has spread, and this guy is thinking it's about him.
Yes.
Very good. I gotta go back and look at what Sarfatti, what Jack Sarfatti says about this movie. Why it freaked him out in '73 when he saw it. Okay, so this article written in. Published in April 1954, Explorations Number 2, is quite an inventory of major McLuhan themes, including what we're talking about, I think. So Don Thiel begins by saying, the novel came of age with the development of Cartesian views of time and space. So when you had the printed book effect, and then Descartes, like the first philosopher of the visual space effect of the printing press, you know, 400 years ago, 500 years ago, the novel is developed at the same time. And it is about, I guess, situations of people trapped in time and space. So he says, the novel came of age with the development of Cartesian views of time and space. So before the printing press, nobody had that 3D limited box effect. But that novel, its death is implicit in the return to multidimensional thinking. So in the 20th century, you get multidimensional. Yes. This is what Thiel's writing. And Thiel's only 20, what would he be in 54?
Yes, and that's again the dream I had, is this multidimensional thinking and doing, that we're becoming aware of all these timelines.
Right, it'll probably fit what we're going to read here. So he's 20, he meets McLuhan in 50 when he's 22, so he's 26. He says, James Joyce, bringing into artistic perspective the multiverses of modern thought, provided key techniques that opened up the post-Newtonian world for artists. So in physics, Einstein opens up the multi-leveled world, maybe. Maybe it's other guys, but he's talking about Einstein here. And Joyce does it for the artist. Joyce's contribution to aesthetics, as T.S. Eliot observed, was analogous to the Einsteinian revolution in physics. Now, that's Theo quoting a quote by Eliot that McLuhan quoted a lot, too. So that's a basic quote, that the discoveries of Joyce were like the discoveries of Einstein. And if you continued in the style of Joyce, you're just like a physicist continuing to study Einstein. You're not plagiarizing. There's just a lot to explore, the breakthroughs that Einstein and Joyce made. In Ulysses, time and space are not treated as abstract guiding lines for the action of the whole novel. That would be the Cartesian novel. I guess the abstract guiding lines would be the grid, the XY grid. So in Ulysses, time and space are not treated as abstract guiding lines for the action of the whole novel, but as relations within a structure. So the structure, what's that going to be? That's going to be an awareness of literacy causing the guiding lines effect. So Joyce is writing a novel showing the history of the novel and what he's going to counter, what he's going to release, liberate. Then Theo says, Finnegan's Wake extends this method by treating language phonoscopically, which may be a word in Finnegan's Wake, phonoscopically. But both books deal with small space-time units, Ulysses with one day in one city, Finnegan's Wake with one night in one house. At a theoretical level, Joyce abandoned, quote, the pinch in time of the ideal. Remember Ian said in that recording, a pinch in time, stitch in time or something? Remember that? That old cliche, a stitch in time?
Stitch in time saves time.
Right.
Stitch in nine saves time.
All right. And yeah, and he's got here a pun on that, the pinch in time of the ideal. So he abandoned the pinch in time of the ideal in an attempt to roll away the real world. And real is R-E-E-L, which means the movie world. So he's emphasizing maybe the radio world. While at a practical level, he provided a, quote, verbi vocal visual presentiment. So there's three media. Vocal, the mouth. Verbi would be language, written language, and visual would be image. So he's trying to present a multimedia, multisensory multiverse to show the new world's difference from the Cartesian world. So here's Theo laying down McLuhan themes in this very esoteric analysis of James Joyce. And this is being done when nobody really was allowed to read James Joyce in academia. So then Theo says, Joyce firmly centered his art within the bounds of the individual personality, the naked eye. Is that not the worlds revolving around a person that I was talking about earlier tonight, and the universe is the all the worlds revolving around you. So you're the the naked eye at this heart of this. I'm not sure. So
well, you're the character in your bottle looking at all directions because you're at the center.
You're a little too much echo there. You're on the speakerphone. Say that again.
I said you are the character in the bottle looking at all directions because you are at the center.
Right, right. That's the image of the three faces you're talking about, right? Or four faces.
Yes, we can see three, but there is one hidden.
Right. So then, he lays out the difference between Ulysses and Finnings Wake between themselves, and then how they're different from the traditional novel. Then Thiel says, the poles of interpretation of these works are marked by the comments of two painter critics. So there's two guys that talk about Joyce that provide, like, the opposite views. They're the poles of interpretation. Now, Joyce's good buddy, Frank Budgen, he was a painter. Frank Budgen saw them, these books, as great landscape works, verbal paintings. But Wyndham Lewis, another painter, condemned both for their lack of spatial orientation and their compatibility with the Bergsonian notion of time flux. He criticized Joyce for being too involved with the time school, the flow of time, which in McLuhan terms is the acoustic world. So Wyndham Lewis, the painter, is very devoted to the eye. Frank Budgen, he's not involved in those kind of sensory dynamics that Lewis is on about. He just sees the books as verbal paintings. So those are two approaches to Joyce. Then Mathiel says, but the goal of the critic's quest. Now let's look at this. As I talk about Finnings Wake and Joyce, we're looking at Ion. Let's substitute Ion for this. So you have the Bible. Traditional interpretation of the Bible, the novel, and then Ion comes along to show multidimensional aspects of the Bible. It's not a simple novel. All right?
Yes.
And he's going to present a multisensory, multispatial thing, the verbi vocal visual presentiment. And he's firmly centered his art within the bounds of the individual personality, the naked eye. That would be the God. Ion's emphasis on the God. You as the God in the center of this phantasmagoria. And then you have two angles on Ion. He's painting a great landscape, or he's too much into no time. Wyndham Lewis, the space guy, would object his emphasis on time and no time. So then Thiel says, but the goal of the critic's quest, so let's say the Ionot, the goal of the Ionot should not be the identification of these works with some doctrinaire position. In other words, you wouldn't look at Ion as one side or the other of the poles of interpretation. Ion includes them and is more than that. And this is how you look at Joyce. It's the analysis of their realistic organization. So you don't identify with the two doctrinaire schools. You analyze the structure of them, which Don's calling their realistic organization. So we're looking at Ion after much familiarity of what Ion can do. We are looking at the structure Ion is talking about, that's the structure Ion is telling us to become aware of.
There is a small documentary or video in which Jean Cocteau is addressing the people in the year 2000.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when he did that, but he says he doesn't believe in death.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was visiting a friend of his that has an airplane fabric. And he says the planes, even the new ones, seem to me like old technology. And he says we should be using anti-gravity instead of that technology. And he says, a lot of our technologies are mistakes that we think is progress, but we are developing the wrong technologies that, like in the case of the plane.
Right.
He said we shouldn't be using motors and gasoline, but anti-gravity sound or something else. And
that's pretty neat. Now, go ahead.
Yes, well, just to mention that this awareness of the people who are ascended about technologies and how they expand us or hypnotize us and make us like zombies.
Yeah, now, but here's the question, the Roxy. Ultimate, Roxy, okay, no more.
The alchemist knew that the ultimate real technology that we have to develop is our own body. That was the thing that we have to develop to stop trying to do things we should do with our own body with technology like ESP or
right.
other things.
Okay, now here's the issue with Cocteau. He is listed as a member of the Priory of Sion, which is the fake bullshit Priory of Sion that my father's employers put out there to distract people. The question is, why did my father introduce me to Jean Cocteau? Why isn't Cocteau ever talked about by my father? Maybe he was, but I never heard it. It's an interesting question about what Cocteau knows, because the reason my father's bosses told me to go look into McLuhan is that they were quite taken by McLuhan understanding the medium as the message. And if Cocteau is a member of the real Priory of Sion gang, then he knows that. That's what the intelligence agencies knew. He's showing us what the intelligence agencies knew about media. They knew it hypnotized people, and that kept them off the oligarchs' backs. So there's a lot here about Cocteau that we should look into. And my father seemed quite knowledgeable of what was coming in the future. That may be the normal information that you got out of the priory, the real priory, when you hung out with him, and maybe Cocteau shows that he is a member of the real priory by what he knows in this, what he's showing in this movie. I just don't know why.
It's amazing how all these things, like the castles and Leonardo and all these things, actually link with you.
Right. And that's why I'm wondering, why the hell didn't anybody tell me about Jean? What were they hiding from me?
Well, now you know. It was your... You had to wait until now to really get it.
Right. And, you know, I kept reading about it in Jack Sarfati's literature. You know, kept talking about this movie that he saw when he was in Paris in 73. Maybe I should go, maybe a little later I'll go out and get his book out and see what he actually says about it. I mean, it's pretty surprising what you're seeing in this. It's a pretty avant-garde movie.
Yes, it's completely ionic, but without the ionic understanding, it's all weird.
Right.
But as you say, it's a really good explanation that these things that we think are fiction or surreal are actually documentary.
Right. Okay, I'm just cleaning up something here. Okay, I'm going to go back to Thiel. So are you following how I'm going to try to make this analysis of Finning's Wake an analysis of Iondom, how you approach Iondom, like surmising that Finning's Wake is an instruction manual for advanced ascension, mixing...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Fulcanelli, in the book of Fulcanelli says... the Kotich materials were not a place only for practicing religion. It was actually a whole, like you say, education of perception.
School. That's what William Irwin Thompson says.
They had the techniques and other things going on.
In the churches, the medieval churches, is that what you're saying?
In the Gothic cathedrals, Notre Dame.
There's another one that begins with Chartres. Thompson talks about the school of Chartres, Chartres, maybe, Chartres. He names a couple in his writings. Yes, he says that's what went on there. They were influenced by the Sufis and the Arabs that got over to northern Africa at that time. Okay, so let's continue here. So you got to explore Ion, you don't get into looking for a doctrinaire conceptual religion. You're looking at different sensory modalities. Okay, two conversations here. So there's two conversations. So then he says, picture Joyce planning the Wandering Rocks section of Ulysses with a map of Dublin, a stopwatch, and streetcar timetables. So he wants to make the streetcar environment of Dublin. He gets friends to walk it out, measure all these things, and then stick it into his novel, the actual dimensions of the streetcar in Dublin. Then Thiel says, throughout, the emphasis is on the relations of man to the real world. Joyce condenses all human experience to the form of the human body. Now, that's what Ion does. He makes the body the eternal organ, and you don't have to die, and all experience is revolved around what you do with your body. Right?
And that was the layout of the cathedrals were an expanded human body. They represented the temple.
So Joyce is doing the same thing. He condenses all human experience to the form of the human body, which the McLuhan quote was, all human experience is in the mirror as a cycle. So then,
and that was what the Frank I was trying to do with the Louvre when he copies the Temple of Man in Luxor in the Louvre.
So here's James Joyce doing the same thing those guys were doing before him, and it is what it's a basic ground of Ion and what Ion said to us. The importance of the human body. And then he says it's the cellular level of the human body and the blood level. So then Thiel says, in Finnegan's Wake, the action takes place in the body of the giant Tim Finnegan. So there's the giant of the Louvre, and it's in the body of the giant. So the giant is your latent self. Your ascended self is a giant. You wouldn't be limited by time and space, 3D, novelistic Cartesian views of time and space, and the appropriate visual icon of that would be a giant, because you're bigger than what little man expects. And so the whole action of Finney's Wake or Iondom takes place in the body. Like when I asked Ion, why is JW stop drinking, smoking, and coffee and all that? They go, due to what happens to the chromosome 14. Their first answer is something in the body. You know, that's that March, very early recording, March something. We sell it, the 30-minute recording. So there's Ion refining. Joyce is, in general, showing the importance of the body, but Joyce doesn't have the details that Ion's going to have about chromosome 14, unless it's really embedded in there. So in this, looking at Tim Finnegan, the giant, his blood is a river, and that's time, man's temporal flux, and that's the mother, the woman, the wife, and Olivia Plurabelle. Then Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker, or HCE, also meaning here comes everybody, he's not a river, he's a rock, and a phallic stuttering inseminating principle. So the sort of the the creative part or the thing that starts insemination is the male. So you know how ion is defined in Nostradamus as the wave meeting the wall. The wave is the water, and the wall is the rock. The same dialectic is in Finnegan's Wake.
Mm.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And McLuhan says that Joyce has stone and water on every line he wrote. So that's his alphabet, those two phenomena. And yet they refer to processes in the body, because the rock is going to be the brain, the head. Okay? As this unfolds. Now, Thompson talks about the Kundalini goes from the base of the spine up to the top. It's the merging of the sperm and the brain, or the pineal gland. That was one aspect we talked about a few weeks ago. That's one school of the brain-blood interaction. Does Ion say anything about how the changed blood affects cognition?
Other than they say we have all knowing, other than saying we have all knowing once we merge with our power.
Right, and there's most people report a clearer head, clearer perception, clearer thinking. So, okay, so then Joyce says that's the wake, but Ulysses also. Each section of the wake is structured about an organ of the body and its characteristic rhythm. That's the chart that I memorized. That's in one of the videos that we did, where I just spew out the chart where there's different organs and different rhythms. So he organized his first book, Ulysses, with the episodes relating to parts of the body. So they take place inside the body. So then Thiel says, both books emphasize the horizontal and vertical aspects of the body symbolism. Now, the vertical school was the one kind of secret society, and the horizontal school was the other kind of secret society. More, the vertical school was into moral discipline, largely the effect of the Western visual space. And you assume it's a fallen world and you're going to ascend out of it. Whereas that's the vertical school. The horizontal school is plunge yourself into matter and extinguish yourself. That's the Oriental, Eastern, get rid of your ego approach. Whereas the West, sort of develops the ego and makes it purer, or has purer moral action. So the two points that McLuhan says are in the secret society history, the two types of schools, Joyce has in Finnegan's Wake. So here's where McLuhan is constantly translating Finnegan's Wake, and with Theo's article, we find out a lot of the esoteric themes of McLuhan are in the Wake. So Theo is exposing McLuhan. This is in 54. McLuhan's just started writing some of this stuff, but he's going to develop it, and Theo's already on to the Finnegan's Wake context, because if you read this in 54, you'd see, vertical and horizontal schools, what's that? Then they, if you're lucky, stumble across an essay not published where McLuhan's talking about it. He does, I think, mention briefly the horizontal and vertical symbolisms in one of his essays around this time. So it's really interesting to me how Thiel really knew the ground of McLuhan. You could say the structural, the conceptual. So, and how this is Ionic. Now this gets into how Toronto is the final Freemasonic or secret society. So both novels emphasize the horizontal and vertical aspects of the body symbolism, resolving by amalgamating the quarrel between the supporters of a doctrine of correspondences, that's Swedenborg, Blake, etc., and the doctrine of synesthesia, the symbolists. But he has the French word symbolisme. So both works emphasize the two secret doctrines, the Swedenborg, Blake, and the mystical side, and then the engaging language. it's almost like the Doctrine of Correspondence is the rising above yourself, rising above little man's fallen world. That would be you match the artwork with heaven. McLuhan writes about that right at the same time in 54. The matching of efforts in this world with heaven. So you make a correspondence, as above, so below. That's the vertical school. The horizontal school plunges into matter and its sensory dynamics and would end up being a punning monster, mixing his senses up into synesthesia. You get that?
Yeah.
Where are you?
Yes.
Let's see if anybody got knocked off and is blocked. Oh, yeah, it looks like someone is blocked there. Renew this. Boy, a couple people. Where's Gene? They can't take this. They've all dropped off. Oh, bastards.
Yay.
This is... Right. Yay.
I'm back.
What? What was that?
Yeah, Bob. It's Nick. Nick.
Oh, okay. Where's Gene?
I have not.
Gene's going to have to explain. Well, we'll see. She'll come back. She'll claim she was here. But not cool to get this very esoteric, sophisticated interpretation of Iandom or how
Pearls
Ion
of
is
wisdom.
Playing.
Always, Bob. Pearls of wisdom.
That's what you say, Nick. I know. Oh.
What?
What was that?
What?
Someone hit that.
What?
There's
Gene. Yeah, Gene was sleeping. Sleeping.
Dang it.
Caught him in sleep in peace, Gene.
Yeah. Wake up, man. You'll re-listen to this anyways, don't you? So if anybody's going to fall asleep, it's going to be you, so it's okay that it's you.
Okay,
continuing. You got these two doctrines, very important secret knowledge of European culture, and Ion, in a sense, what does Ion do? It seems to emphasize the vertical aspect. Ascend, withdraw from the bullshit, get into yourself. But Ion spends all his time talking about the world around you, the social mortar. So I don't think it's that cut and dry. He does emphasize the vertical school first, and then lurking around that is his horizontal school of media madness that Ion likes to discuss. So the next sentence is, for as Joyce emphasizes the vertical element of the wake, well, that's what I was just saying. Ion emphasizes the vertical element. And then there's a pun on as above, so below. The flasks above are as the tasks below. So with that in mind, Joyce develops the horizontal movement of, quote, Little Annie Rooney, another version of ALP, Little Annie Rooney, in the body of the giant Tim Finnegan. So for as Joyce emphasizes the vertical element, he also so Joyce is doing both, is what Don's saying here, Don Thiel. In the structural chart that he used in preparing Ulysses, books 9 and 10, now that's 9 and 10 is 19, Bob's number, corresponding to Book 9 is called Scylla and Charybdis, or Scylla and Charybdis, and 10 is the Wandering Rock section. They're devoted, Book 9, Scylla and Charybdis are devoted to literature, and Book 10 is to mechanics. So these actually are the dialectical school, and the mechanics is labyrinthine, the labyrinth of cognition techniques. So the book person gets into simple dialectic and then complexifies it, and that would be the doctrine of correspondences people, maybe. And then the labyrinth of cognition people are the ones who are in the doctrine of synesthesia and perceptual issues. And that's it spelled out in Chapter 10 in the Wandering Rocks section, which I guess, if I recall, has a lot about machines in the Dublin Society. So then Thiel says, this combination of literature and mechanics, or you could say visual space and then kinetic space, but you might include electric media back then, this combination forms the core of both books, for it is the interplay of brain and bloodstream, rock and water, the labyrinth of cognition, and the dialectics of opposition. All those interacting creates universal movement. Time and space are treated under the microcosmos of one body. Both works achieve their epiphany in the human body. In Ulysses, it's the climactic moment in the second last chapter where Bloom and Stephen unite, have a conversation at Bloom's home, 7 Eccles Street. The Wake has its epiphany in the human body via the climax as the night world dissolves with the impact of daylight on the sleepers. So look at that. You know, brain ions talking about the autonomic nervous system and the hypothalamus that's in the brain area, right? You got the brain and bloodstream, rock and water. Ion is the wave that meets the wall. Then you have the doctrine of the stages of apprehension or the drama of cognition versus the dialectics of enmity, of opposition. And the interplay of these two cores creates movement. So what do you think of that? Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yes.
The brain and bloodstream. Iondom. Ion gives us teaches or tries to wake up your awareness of the labyrinth of cognition. When I'm talking about thought and electricity, it's all mixed up there with ion. What's thought? What's electrical? And then he starts claiming electrical has nothing to do with it. And then the dialectics of opposition would be, what's a dialectic ion offers? Anything? Us and the pinks. What does ion? Sean was off. Just trying to ion. The ascended and the little man would be ion's dialectic.
Yes.
The opposition that's laid out in the Emerald Tablets. But aside from. So your basic opposition between you and your little people as you ascend and develop your goddess self, at the same time there's a world of mortar, which is the world of the labyrinth of cognition. Okay, so you're going to have to involve a lot of knowledge, academic categories, book reading to get to this point. So the next paragraph says, the work of art for Joyce, as the body metaphor suggests, plays its role in this structuring of knowledge by providing an anthropology, a type of knowledge and insight into man and his cultural artifacts. Okay, so that's going to be the labyrinth world, the social mortar world of creations that come from outside rather than sticking with the inside of yourself. The tension between. Oop. Did you hear that sound?
Yeah.
Are you still there, Roxy?
Yes.
Okay. The tension between the position of art as dealing with artifacts. So that's one angle. And artifacts are things made and manipulated by man. And the romantic view of art as natural philosophy. I think, Roxy, your large part of your education in university and that was the romantic view. The romantic view of the individual being the genius of originality. And you got no training in the world of social mortar and artifacts, which is the McLuhan world.
Well, I'm okay? Working on it.
But I'm saying that's how most people's educations are. They're the one or the other. They don't get both. And when you start getting both, you get into anthropology, which is looking at a man and all his humans and all their cultural artifacts. So The work of Arthur Joyce. Yes, the alchemy is in the next sentence. It says, in the romantic view of art as natural philosophy, all right, the tension between the two schools, art dealing with artifacts and the romantic view of art as natural philosophy, is developed by making the artist of the night world an alchemist or alchemist. Alchemist is a Finnegan's Wake word based on Shem. Shem and Shauna are the brothers. An alchemist, and Shem is the isolated, monastic, reclusive, hidden from society, alchemist or alchemist. So the tension between the position of artists dealing with the artifacts, that would be the synesthesia, and the romantic view of art as natural philosophy, that is the doctrine of correspondences. So we again are, he's repeating the this on the page, what's presented as a dialectic between the two schools, two approaches. So throughout Finnegan's Wake, okay, throughout Eyendom, run thematic references to Swift and Sterne. That's Jonathan Swift, Gulliver's Travels, and Sterne, Lawrence Sterne, he wrote Tristram Shandy. They both did Menippean satires. So Ion likes the Menippean rappers, or seems to point them out because they're what's happening now. So throughout Iondom run thematic references to Yo Gotti and P. Daddy as extreme representatives of the timeless neoclassical synthesis achieved by Ben Jonson and Alexander Pope. Look at that, timeless neoclassical synthesis. Ion is classical in the sense of taking us back to origins. So Swift and Sterne are representatives of the synthesis. They lived around the same time. And they're also similar to Ben Jonson and Pope. I assume it doesn't mean Dr. Jonson here. What Pope did in the Dunciad, which was a book satirizing the book industry, what Pope did in the Dunciad was to combine the Sterne poise for a Swift pounce. So Pope combined Lawrence Sterne and Dean Swift. What's his first name? Jonathan, yeah. He combines Sterne and Swift. Sterne has a Sterne poise and Swift has a pounce. So Pope brings the two of them together, working on the principle that, quote, same thing rivisable in nighttime may be invaulted into the zeroic couplet. So Joyce is saying that it gets electrified. Something risible in nighttime may be invaulted, if you think of volts, into the zeroic couplet. The heroic couplet, or the zeroic couplet, forget what it is the technique for Pope's poetry. The heroic poetry? Maybe it's a zeroic, I don't know, couplet. But that's referencing his style of rhyme. So Alexander Pope's Essay on Man, for example, is an attempt to provide a comic portrait of man's mind in act. Ion often tries to show a comic portrait of our minds in action. And Pope's essay is a dynamic map in which the contours are changing and shifting from a series of fixed points. That's the angel diagram. A dynamic map in which the contours are changing and shifting from a series of fixed points. James Joyce's interest, like Alexander Pope's, is in providing dynamic models for the changes taking place within the sensibility of man in the contemporary world. So Ion's interest is in providing models for the changes taking place in the eye cell zone, whatever the eye cell is influencing in the contemporary world. Okay? In Finnegan's Wake, Joyce described his method as presenting, quote, the map of the soul's groupography. Groupography. The group. The soul's group. That's Ion talking about what we did today. You look in the mirror and see a million echoes of yourself, visually. All those reflected worlds of yourself. That's the map of the soul's groupography. Groupography. What do you think of that? Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
So Joyce's interest, dynamic models, showing the man's mind in act. So then he said, Thiel says, the metaphor is relevant. Not sure what the metaphor may be, the map of the soul's groupography. Not sure what he's referring to. The metaphor is relevant because human communication occurs by verbal spatialization. I guess that's the map, indicates spatialization, or specialization. Man having, quote, learned to speak from hand to mouth till he could talk Irish with his eyes shut. Irish, E-A-R, is a pun on Irish. So the human learned to speak from hand to mouth till he could talk Irish with his eyes shut. Shutting your eyes would be emphasizing the acoustic vibes. So then Joyce says, thus there is a language of gestures which depends on mutual participation beginning at the subverbal level. That is the gestures of the OA TV show. Remember that? What was that show called? Stranger?
OA. OA.
Oh, yeah, it was called OA.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened in OA?
They had those movements. They had the five
right,
movements.
But I'm just trying to think of the plot. The Stranger Things, that was them. Who went into OA? Did you put on the apparatus over your head and die? Or was that in Stranger Things?
Yes, yes. They had a. That was an experiment that was done on those people that were caught in the dungeon. That they would
right.
He would kill them and then he would put them to death and then monitor them. So that was OA.
That was OA. Okay. So thinking of gestures, thus there is a language of gestures which depends on mutual participation. Beginning at the subverbal level where one employs, quote, the hand touch, that is speech, without words, and moving to an awareness of the self where it can be seen that we, quote, agree to every word as soon as half-uttered, command me, your servant, good, I revere you, how, my seer, be drinking that, quite truth, gracious, I'm youth, see what I'm hearing? So all that is grunt people. Communicating what I call in cloning the ESP blocking and merging. So the gestures, I talk about the gestures in the initial communication, the initial encounters. And that depends on people responding to each other, mutual participation. And it's at the subverbal level. Thus, there is a language of gestures which depends on mutual participation beginning at the subverbal level where one employs hand signals for the blind. Here it says, the hand touch, that is speech without words. And you move to an awareness of the self where it can be seen that we agree to every word as soon as half uttered, command me, your servant, good, I revere you, how, my seer, how be drinking that, quite truth, gracious, I'm yush, see what I'm hearing? So a lot of emphasis on the ear there. The ear and the hand touch. Okay. Ion's linguistic method is vivisective. So he's saying here, Joyce's linguistic method is vivisective, portraying the whole community in action through his verbi-vocal-visual presentiment. That's through the Finning's Wake. The dynamic model in art. So Joyce's linguistic method, Ion's linguistic method, is vivisective. It likes to analyze the entrails, get into the words, the etymology. It does some slicing up, while at the same time portraying the whole community in action through Ion's multimedia expressions. Are you following me? You getting this, Gene?
Yeah.
No comment from Gene. So to show the community in action, that's what McLuhan said his mechanical bride was about back in these years. That's the dynamic model in art, not images or studio artifacts. The whole interaction of society becomes an awareness of the new media ecology, the whole community in action. So Joyce is trying to show that. So that's why he would not take sides. He's got to show both sides or all the sides. And he's going to give you an x-ray of the whole thing. Okay, so let's just say, look at that, the hand touch. H-A-N-D-T-O-U-C-H. That is speech without words. So there's other sensory interactions before.